The Café Louvre smelled of roasted beans and old wood, the kind of warmth that made you forget, for a moment, that November was pressing against the windows like a hand. Vera sat at her usual table near the back, the one with the scarred surface and the brass footrail that caught at the ankles of anyone who passed too close. She had arrived early, as she always did, because arriving early meant choosing the seat, and choosing the seat felt like the only decision she got to make on her own. Outside, the street was gray with the particular Prague fog that settled in late autumn and refused to lift until March. Inside, the café breathed. Waiters moved between tables with trays balanced on their wrists, their uniforms the same faded maroon they'd worn since the 50s, maybe longer. The espresso machine hissed and clicked like a metronome set to something slightly anxious. Vera watched it. She always watched the machines. There was comfort in their predictable violence. She ordered black coffee and didn't drink it right away. She held the cup in both hands, feeling the heat seep through the porcelain, and she counted the people who entered. That was her ritual now: observe, catalog, release. It had started after the ministry, after the poem, after she'd read the signature twice and found it wrong. She couldn't unread it. She couldn't unsee the jagged slant of the letters, the ink pooling into dark, viscous knots on the page, evidence of a hand pressing down with deliberate force. She had told no one, not her mother, not anyone. The door opened again, cold air slipped in ahead of him. Jiri stood in the doorway for a moment, letting the café air settle around him like a coat he hadn't taken off. He was taller than she expected, or perhaps the doorway made him seem taller, narrow frame, shoulders hunched against the weather even though he wasn't outside anymore. His hair was blonde, the color of weak tea left too long in the cup, suggesting it had once been more carefully managed than it currently was. He wore a jacket that had been good at some point, maybe 2 years ago, and now it hung on him with the loose generosity of someone who had lost weight or simply stopped caring. He spotted her immediately. He always did. Not because she was conspicuous, she wasn't, but because he seemed to have a radar for the women who were trying very hard not to be noticed. "You're early," he said, sliding into the chair opposite her. He didn't ask permission, he never did. "So are you." He smiled, which was not quite a smile, more like the memory of one, passing through without fully arriving. He reached into his jacket pocket and withdrew a pack of cigarettes, tapped one free, and lit it with a match from the table. The flame cupped in his palm like something fragile. "I had a meeting that ended early," he said, "or it began late. Hard to tell the difference sometimes." Vera picked up her coffee. It had cooled enough to drink. She took a sip and said nothing. Silence was easier than explaining why she had chosen this table, why she had arrived 20 minutes before the agreed hour, why her hands trembled a familiar, involuntary vibration that surged whenever Jiri was near, as though her body had decided something her mind had not yet consented to. Jiri exhaled smoke toward the ceiling and studied her over the rim of his glass. He drank water. He always drank water. It was one of the things she found irritating about him, and possibly one of the things she found attractive. "What did you think?" he asked. He didn't need to specify what. The poem, the ministry, the signature. Three words that contained everything neither of them wanted to say out loud. Vera set her cup down. "It was fine." "Fine," he repeated the word as though tasting it, finding it lacking. "Vera, you don't translate poems because they're fine." She looked at him properly for the first time. His eyes were gray, the color of the sky outside, the color of the river on days when the water looked like ground glass. He had the kind of face that aged unevenly, young around the mouth, older around the eyes, as though his smile had been invented separately from his experience. "It's just a poem," she said. "A minor poet, local publication." "Nothing is just anything," Jiri said. He leaned forward slightly, and the cigarette dangled from his fingers like an afterthought. "That's what they want you to believe. Nothing is just a poem. Nothing is just a meeting. Nothing is just—" He stopped. He took a drag. "You're not going to tell me, are you?" Vera folded her hands on the table. She could feel the scar on her left thumb, the one she'd gotten cutting bread last week, the one that had bled more than it should have, as though her body were still trying to get rid of something. "I'm a translator," she said. "I translate poems, that's all." Jiri looked at her for a long time. The café continued around them, the clatter of cups, the low murmur of conversations that had nothing to do with them, the woman at the next table stirring her sugar in a slow circle, 6 times, no more, no less. Vera noticed these things. She always noticed these things. It was how she survived. "You know," Jiri said quietly, "people are starting to ask questions about you." Vera's hands tightened. "About me?" "At the ministry, at the bar, in the places where journalists go to listen." He flicked ash into the saucer. "They say you've been spending time with Western press. They say you're accessible, too accessible." "Is that what they say?" "That's what I heard." He paused. "I don't repeat everything I hear, Vera, but I repeat the things that matter." She should have felt afraid. She did feel afraid, not as terror, but as a low hum in the background, like the refrigerator compressor in her kitchen at night, a sound she barely noticed until it stopped, leaving a silence that felt suddenly deafening. "Why are you telling me this?" she asked. "Because I'm tired of watching you pretend that the ground beneath you isn't cracking." He said it gently. That was the worst part. He said terrible things gently. "And because I think you already know, I think you've known since Tuesday." Tuesday? She had spent Tuesday in the ministry basement, in the room with the broken radiator and the shelves of books that no one had checked out in years. She had been translating a poem by some forgotten lyricist, a man whose work had been published in 1952 and then quietly forgotten, as things were forgotten here. The poem had been about a river, or it had been about something else entirely. The words were simple, almost childish in their directness. The water remembers what the land forgets. And underneath, in the spacing, in the jagged break of the stanza, there was another sentence, or a direction, or a map. She hadn't been able to articulate it. She hadn't been able to prove it. But she had felt it, a subtle shift in the air like the groan of timber before it snaps. "I don't know what you're talking about," she said. Jiri reached across the table. His hand covered hers briefly, firmly. His skin was warm and rough, the palm calloused from whatever he gripped, pens, cameras, the steering wheels of cars he didn't own. He let go almost immediately, as though he'd forgotten he'd touched her at all. "On Tuesday," Jiri said, "you stayed past closing. The janitor told me. He said you asked him to wait downstairs while you went back to the stacks. What were you looking for, Vera, beyond the poem?" The waitress approached with a pot of coffee and a small plate of bread rolls wrapped in linen. Vera stared at the linen as if it might contain instructions. The waitress poured without asking and moved on. Jiri took a roll and broke it in half, not eating it, just breaking it, his fingers working the crust until it surrendered. "My editor in Prague is pushing for a piece on the cultural purge," he said, conversationally, as though they were discussing the weather. "He wants names. He wants sources. He wants to know who at the ministry is cooperating and who is resisting. He thinks you might be the latter." "I'm neither," Vera said. "I'm a translator." "Who reads your translations before they go to print?" he asked. "The censors. Or do you decide what stays and what disappears? And when you decide, what happens to the things you erase?" She thought of her mother, upstairs in their flat above the printer's shop, hoarding sugar and ration coupons in silence. She watched Elena Novikova's eyes slide away, avoiding contact with a careful distance, as though Vera were a room she wasn't sure she was allowed to enter anymore. She thought of the poem, the signature, the ink pooling on the page in thick, glossy clots. "I translate what I'm given," she said. "That's my job." "And what happens when the thing you're given is a lie?" "Then I translate the lie." Jiri was quiet for a moment. The cafe had filled up. More people, more voices, more reasons to believe that the world was continuing as though nothing had changed. Vera envied them. She envied their ability to sit in warm cafes and drink coffee and discuss nothing, to let the fog press against the windows without acknowledging it. "You could be more than a machine," Jiri said. "You could be a person who understands what she's doing." "I understand perfectly." "Do you?" He tapped the table with his cigarette. The ash fell. "Then explain to me why your hands are shaking." Vera looked down. Her hands were flat on the table, still as stone. They weren't shaking. They weren't. "I'm cold," she said. The lie was so transparent that even she could see it. Jiri saw it too. He didn't call her on it. He never did. That was his talent. He saw everything and pretended to see only what you wanted him to see, which was somehow worse than if he'd been honest about his perception. "I have something for you," he said. He reached into his jacket again, slower this time, and withdrew a small notebook, the kind students used, with a plain black cover and nothing written on it. He placed it on the table between them. "Read it tonight. Not here. Not anywhere you can be seen. Read it and then decide what you want to do with it." Vera didn't touch it. "What is it?" "A poem, another one, by the same author." Jiri's voice dropped. "But this one doesn't have the disguise." "That's impossible." "Is it?" he waited. "The first poem was a test, to see if anyone would notice. You noticed. That's why they're watching you now. That's why I'm here." She stared at the notebook. It was unremarkable. Plain. The kind of object that could belong to anyone, which was precisely why it belonged to her. "I don't want it," she said. "Yes, you do," Jiri stood. He finished his water. He left the cigarette burning in the ashtray, which was rude, which was typical. "Meet me here Thursday. Same time. Bring the notebook back if you've decided you don't want it. Leave it here if you have." "That's not a choice." "No," he agreed. "It isn't, but it's the only one you're going to get." He turned to leave. At the door, he paused and looked back at her over his shoulder. The fog swirled behind him, turning the street into something that looked like water. "One more thing," he said. "Don't trust anyone at the ministry who asks you about your weekend plans, especially if they offer you tea." Then he was gone. The door closed. The cafe absorbed him without ceremony, without memory, swallowing his silhouette into the haze of roasted beans and old wood. Vera sat alone at her table. The notebook remained between them, innocent and dangerous, exactly the same object in both categories. She picked up her coffee cup. It was cold now. She drank it anyway. Outside, the fog thickened. Inside, the espresso machine hissed and clicked, and the woman at the next table stirred her sugar for the seventh time, having lost count, having finally, mercifully, stopped caring. Vera put her hands in her lap. They were still. They would be for a while, then they wouldn't be, she knew that much. She knew the layout of her apartment, the exact number of steps from her bed to the door, 6, always 6, never fewer, never more. She knew things. That was her gift and her curse. She knew things, and knowing them didn't protect her from them. She left the notebook on the table. She paid with coins from her purse, counting them carefully, 3 crowns for the coffee, 1 for the service, and she walked out into the fog without looking back, because looking back was a habit she was trying to break, and habits, like poems, had layers you couldn't always see until it was too late. The street was empty except for a tram moving slowly through the mist, its lights blurred to soft halos, its passengers invisible behind fogged glass. Vera walked toward the old town, her footsteps measured, her breath visible in the cold air, each exhale a small surrender to the atmosphere, each one disappearing as quickly as it had formed. She would go home. She would eat something her mother had prepared without enthusiasm. She would sit in the room with the peeling wallpaper and the radiator that clanked at irregular intervals, and she would wait until midnight, when the flat was quiet and her mother's breathing was steady and the printer's shop below was dark and sealed. And then she would take the notebook from her bag, because of course she would take it. Because of course she had picked it up and put it in her bag without deciding to. Because decisions were often made by the body before the mind consented, and she would read it. And she would understand. And understanding would be the beginning of everything she had been trying not to become. The tram passed. The fog swallowed it. Prague held its breath, as it always did, waiting for the next word, the next order, the next poem that was not a poem at all but a message in disguise, and she walked through it all. A translator walking through a city of translations, each street a sentence, each building a paragraph, each life a text she was only beginning to learn how to read.